Dropkick Murphys from the Signed and Sealed in Blood album with Rose Tattoo here on the Viva La Mach radio program. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was recently DJing down at Arsenal Lanes, and it wasn't a Thursday. Normally, I'm there on Thursdays for 80s and 90s night, but this was a Tuesday I filled in. And that song was requested. I was like, yeah, I should put that in my show. So we'll call that a request. It was requested, and I played it at Arsenal, but I'm playing it for you today. Before the Dropkick Murphys, how about some Pogues? Yeah, that inspired the entire set of music. Yeah, I built that all around that one suggestion. Pogues taking us to the sunny side of the street. And then, here's a fun one. Before the Pogues is a band called Imar from their second album, Avalanche. Name of the song was Trip to Novi Sad. Now, Imar, it's a project consisting of largely the main arranger and songwriter behind it's a Scottish man named Donald Shaw. But what he does is he's tried to overlap or take the overlapping cultural characteristics of Scotland, Ireland, and the Isle of Man and just kind of, he said at one point they all shared the same Gaelic language. And if you talk to someone, they're like, hey, I'm Scotch-Irish. That's kind of what they're talking about. And I found that song. Get this, I'm listening to WRCT and I'm hearing a song and I'm like, wow, this is a really good song. So I throw it on the Shazam, and Shazam came up with that song. But the weird part was when the song got over and the DJ announced it, it was a totally different song. So their algorithm was a little off on that one. So I played it because I thought it was a good song. Imar, I-M-A-R, in case you're trying to Google that. Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. Start off the entire set with their version of Dirty Old Town, which Pittsburgh used to be a dirty old town. Now it's a clean, vibrant, hip town. Well, it's always been a hip town. You guys have known that. Anyway, my name is Paul. I am the Mockster. This is a show called Viva La Mach here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the January 6th Trump riots. Joe Biden, the president, spoke to the country yesterday morning, and it was without question the best speech Joe Biden has ever given. Now, whether you think that there was a low standard or a high standard for that, it doesn't really matter. It was by far the best speech that he has given as president. The energy, the fire. Where has it been until now? Almost like a completely different Biden. And we're going to look at the speech. The speech was immediately called divisive by Fox News, which to me means Joe Biden did a really good job of placing blame for the January 6th riots of 2021 exactly where they belong, at the feet of Donald Trump to a great degree. Let's just jump right into the first segment.
What did we not see? We didn't see a former president who had just rallied the mob to attack, sitting in the private dining room off the Oval Office in the White House, watching it all on television.
Right.
And doing nothing for hours as police were assaulted, lives at risk, the nation's capital under siege. This wasn't a group of tourists. This was an armed insurrection. They weren't looking to uphold the will of the people. They were looking to deny the will of the people.
True.
They were looking to uphold. They weren't looking to uphold a free and fair election. They were looking to overturn one. They weren't looking to save the cause of America. They were looking to subvert the Constitution. This isn't about being bogged down in the past. This is about making sure the past isn't buried. That's the only way forward. That's what great nations do. They don't bury the truth. They face up to it. Sounds like hyperbole, but that's the truth. They face up to it. We are a great nation. My fellow Americans, in life there's truth, and tragically there are lies. Lies conceived and spread for profit and power. We must be absolutely clear about what is true and what is a lie. Mm. And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest, and because his bruised ego matters more to him than our democracy or our Constitution. He can't accept he lost.
Very, very well said. And we'll look at a couple of other moments here. Joe Biden saying, are we going to be a country that accepts political violence, or are we going to be a country that rejects that, which is the fundamental question when we think back to these riots?
And so at this moment, we must decide, what kind of nation are we going to be? Are we going to be a nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people?
These are the fundamental questions 1 year in. And the reason that they're fundamental, as much as right wingers want to say, the left is making such a big deal. Like people like Ben Shapiro were saying, the riots were bad, but the people who did it have been punished. It wasn't an insurrection. There was no chance it was going to steal an election. Well, the question is, what will happen in 2022? What will happen in 2024? What if the generals that wrote, the retired generals who wrote that op-ed that I talked to you about on Monday, saying if the military were on the side of the coup, it actually could happen? What about that? And Joe Biden also during the speech laying out what it was that happened on January 6th.
Phony partisan audits were undertaken long after the election in several states. None changed the results. And in some of them, the irony is the margin of victory actually grew slightly. So let's speak plainly about what happened in 2020. Even before the first ballot was cast, the former president was preemptively sowing doubt about the election results.
True.
He built his lie over months. Wasn't based on any facts. He was just looking for an excuse, a pretext to cover for the truth. He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president.
And we will actually talk about Trump's reaction to this a little bit later. But first, we are just following the Joe Biden speech. Joe Biden pointing out something I've been talking about for years, which is, you know, these people's stated principles, which they abandon as soon as they're inconvenient. The same applies to the law, says Joe Biden. You can't just abide in the law when you don't like it.
You can't love your country only when you win. You can't obey the law only when it's convenient. You can't be patriotic when you embrace and enable lies. Those who stormed this Capitol, and those who instigated and incited, and those who called on them to do so, held a dagger at the throat of America and American democracy.
The best speech I have seen Joe Biden give as president. And here he is just winding it down. This is the last clip we'll look at and listen to.
Authority in this nation will always be peacefully transferred. I believe the power of the presidency and the purpose is to unite this nation, not divide it, to lift us up, not tear us apart. It's about us, not about me. Deep in the heart of America burns a flame lit almost 250 years ago of liberty, freedom, and equality. This is not a land of kings or dictators or autocrats. We're a nation of laws, of order, not chaos, of peace, not violence. Here in America, the people rule through the ballot, and their will prevails. So let us remember, together, we're one nation under God, indivisible, that today, tomorrow, and forever at our best, we are the United States of America.
So Joe Biden ending the speech as he often does, but a very, very good speech. The right calling it divisive, the right saying it was not a uniting speech, and it is all typical of the right to say that calling out the divisive actions of a year ago is divisive. Seeing racism is racist. This is the same trope that they've been pulling for a while. Very nicely done by Joe Biden. Doesn't change anything about his effectiveness as a legislator or getting legislation passed. But this was a very good speech. And part of the reason you know it was good is it so triggered the former president, Donald Trump. Donald Trump, within minutes, an hour of Joe Biden's brutal speech condemning his inciting of the Trump riots a year ago yesterday, published a statement riddled with random capitalization and lies and all of the things we have come accustomed to seeing from the former president. Let's take a look at that statement. Donald Trump saying, quote, "Biden, who is destroying our nation with insane policies of open capital B borders, corrupt capital E elections, disastrous energy policies, unconstitutional mandates, and devastating school closures, used my name today to try to further divide America. This political theater is all just a distraction from the fact Biden has completely and totally failed. Our capital C country no longer has capital B borders." That's not true. "Has totally and completely lost control of COVID. Record numbers." We are seeing record numbers. The world is. "Is no longer capital EI energy independent. Capital I inflation is rampant. Our capital M military is in chaos. And our exit or surrender from Afghanistan was perhaps the most embarrassing day in the long and distinguished history of the United States," and so much more. Remember that Trump had no better plan for Afghanistan. Whenever we got out, it was going to be chaos. At least Joe Biden got us out, as I've said before. "Why is it that the unselect committee of totally partisan political hacks, whose judgment has long ago been made, not discussing the rigged presidential election of 2020? Because it wasn't rigged and it's not their charge. That's not what the committee is doing. It's because they don't have the answers or justifications for what happened," says Trump. "They got away with something and it is leading to our capital C country's destruction. They want all conversation concerning the capital E election, capital C canceled. Just look at the numbers. They speak for themselves. They are not justifiable. So the complicit media just calls it the big lie, when in actuality, the big lie was the capital E election itself. As many instances of out and out lying here about Biden's policy and all of these other things, as much as there is random capitalization. Donald Trump highly, highly triggered, which suggests to me that Joe Biden really hit a nerve. It was the right decision for Trump to cancel his press conference yesterday, because as triggered as he was, I can only imagine he would have completely humiliated himself had he actually taken questions from reporters. So that is it. Biden on the 1 year anniversary of the riots and Trump on the 1 year anniversary of the riots. We're going to take a quick break. Find me on Twitter at D Pacman. We will be right back. Make sure you grab yourself a membership at joinpacman.com. You'll get access to the award-winning bonus show. These are all awards we've created, but they are awards. Also, you'll get commercial-free audio and video streams of the show. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Let's get back to the phones after a multi-week hiatus due to various federal holidays and different things and reasons and all of that sort of stuff. We now do calls via Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. Let's start today with, I can't see, is it Kendall from, is it San Marino or somewhere in California, Kendall?
Actually, it's San Marcos, Texas.
San Marcos, okay, that's still allowed. That's okay.
Yeah. Hey, David. So my question is, I have a friend who identifies as a conservative Republican.
Okay.
But she's not like the nowadays Republicans who are very cult-like and all that stuff, and I can have meaningful conversations with her. And when I introduced her to my sister afterward, after my friend had left, my sister, who is very liberal, told me to stop being friends with her just solely based on the fact she is a conservative Republican. How do you think I should handle that situation? Because I don't want to make my friend mad and lose my friend, but I also don't want to piss off my sister, who's been my best friend forever.
Well, so let's the devil is in the details, really. Do your sister and your friend live in close proximity to each other where you would be seeing them together?
Yeah, especially recently. I'm graduating from Texas State University soon, and there's going to be a lot of upcoming events where both of them are going to be in close proximity.
Well, I think you need to decide, do you want to go to your sister and just have a conversation and say, listen, sis, I love you. I want to have a relationship with you. I'm an adult. I have other friends. And this is not some, you know, disgusting, immoral person. It's just kind of, I'm hearing from you, this is just kind of like a basic conservative. And I find her to be a good person, good enough for me to be friends. I want all of us to be able to be adults here and see what the reaction is. The other possibility would be to accept maybe cutting off one or the other, which I don't particularly recommend. I don't think it's at the point where that needs to happen. But it's up to you to determine how far you want to go with this. You know, I can't, it's hard for me to tell you.
I just wanted some advice from someone whose whole job is politics.
My instinct, not knowing nearly enough about you or your friend or your sister or the dynamic, would be to go to your sister and just be very frank and be like, listen, if this was some lunatic racist, Trumpist, whatever, I wouldn't be friends with them, and you should be doing an intervention if I were. But that's not what this is. This is just someone who's kind of like your milquetoast conservative, and we don't agree on things, but this is still a friend of mine, and I want us to all be able to be together. And I hope that you would respect that as my sister and see where it goes. That would be my first step.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, David.
My pleasure. Good. Let us know how it goes. Okay, Kendall?
I will. You have a good day.
All right. There is Kendall from Texas. What a situation. Let's go next to Issa from London. Issa, you are on the air.
Hey, David. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Cool. You may have seen this. Did you see the Louisiana judge who was came under fire because she was caught using racial slurs on her home camera, and then she ended up resigning?
I did see it, yeah.
I want to ask, I feel like, you know, looking into the UK, into the US, sorry, from the outside, I feel like it's kind of a simulation, to the point where, would it be crazy to think that she might run for some kind of local political office now?
No, I mean, you know, obviously their narrative is she's been canceled. You know, she was caught saying something in the privacy of her own home, and now it's been used to force her into resigning. You know, the truth is, as a judge, you regularly have to make decisions that are critical, life-altering decisions for people that come before you in the court. And if there is any reason to believe that on racial grounds, you might be assigning different sentences or evaluating cases, evidence differently, motions, that's a major, major problem. You know, I would stipulate that there are some jobs where you might be a lunatic racist and it really might not make a difference. You know, if you work in, I don't want to diminish any profession, but if it's a profession where you kind of work by yourself, if you work in meat processing and your job is to, you know, scale salmon or something like that, and you basically work by yourself on the production line, you're a lunatic racist. Yeah, it might be hard to relate to the workers that are of a different race, but it's not like part of your job if you're scaling salmon, if that makes sense. Whereas if you're a judge, this is your beliefs about race are so important. Now, you could make the case, well, despite using the racial slurs, she's not actually racist, but you're in a position where the stakes are really, really high. So, but to your point, despite it being completely reasonable what took place, yeah, she might be the type of person that's made a hero by the right and ends up running for public office.
Yeah, no, 100%. I completely agree with what you said about the, if you have some other kind of job. But I feel like stuff like this has happened in the past, and it's kind of led these people to snap and kind of tip them over the edge, and then they become like full-blown right-wing. But
yes,
I was thinking, even if she did run for office, she could probably base like her whole campaign, I guess, around First Amendment or
yeah.
free speech rights being violated or whatever, you know?
100%. You have your finger on the pulse of the culture wars for sure. That could be her entire candidacy. I was canceled, but I'm back.
Yeah. No, exactly. Hey, look, even if she doesn't run for office, you know, maybe 700K a year job at Fox as an analyst or something about how
sure.
the election was stolen.
No, yeah. That'll be cushy. That'll be cushy for sure. Hey, listen, how are things in London with Omicron?
Oh, yeah, it's raging. It's raging, man. Definitely.
Have you had it?
I've all the tests I've done come back negative, but the daily sort of, I guess, new cases shot up to about 200K. That's the highest it's ever been. The deaths haven't been rising too much, kind of been at the same level, between 100 and 200 a day. But yeah, cases have shot up, definitely.
Is the hope there, as it is here, that this wave will come and go with many cases but relatively few deaths, and then maybe we can move on?
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. 100%. But the thing is, we haven't really had any restrictions either.
Right.
And, I work at a university. I work in research, and I got an email today saying, you know, we want to try and maximize in-person campus teaching, campus work, and whatnot. So
yep.
kind of just getting on with it, really.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Are chip shops mostly still open?
Yes, they are.
Okay. And the fish is still fresh and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's frying.
Beautiful. All right, Issa, thank you for the call.
All right. Thanks, David. See
you. All right. Very powerful testimony there as to the situation with fish and chips in London. It's a critical issue. Let's go next to Yusuf from our friendly neighbors to the north in Toronto, Canada. Yusuf, you are on the air.
Question. It's slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also slightly serious.
Oh, you cut out right when we were going to get to the question. I can tell your connection is extremely shaky. Let's see if we can back it up just a little bit and take the question from the top. And he's gone. That's too bad. I was looking forward to hearing from Yusuf. Let's go next to Tom from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Welcome, Tom. Tom from Green Bay, you're on the air. If you unmute, you will be able to talk to me, and I would love that. All right. Tom from Green Bay, I can see that you are muted. I've unmuted you, but you are self-muting. If you unmute, I will be able to talk to you. Otherwise, we will have to move on. All right. That's too bad. I mean, it's like I can see that Tom has not unmuted, which is sad. Let's try Jamie from Canada. Jamie from Canada, you're on the air.
Hello. Happy New Year, David.
Thank you. And we're not on speakerphone, are we?
No, we're not.
Okay,
fine.
Good. It sounds like we are, but you can go ahead.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait.
How does that sound? Does that sound better?
It sounds so much better. I can't even imagine what you were doing before.
Oh, I have this weird thing where I need to plug in a USB microphone to my laptop.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, go ahead. What's on your mind?
I was wondering, you've probably been asked this question before, but why don't you ever run for House or Senate? That's the first part of my question.
You know, I have had conversations with political consultants about possible House seats to target, and I'm just not sure it's something I want to do, to be perfectly frank. I don't know that I could. I just don't know that it's for me. I don't know that I like the idea of having to split time between home and D.C. I don't know that I want the kind of financial oversight that's required for like everything you do. I just am not sure. But when people have asked me, I've not ruled out anything. But for now, there's not been a particular seat that I've decided to target.
Okay. Are you comfortable saying what state you're in, or is that personal?
Well, at the time that these were discussions, it would have been Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Understandable. Also, second part of my question, I had this conversation with my friends back in the beginning of the year when the political climate was still like recovering.
Now, hold on. Do you mean the beginning of last year? Because it were 5 days, the beginning of 2021?
Beginning of 2021, that's what I meant.
Got it.
Sorry, I'm still trying to get used to saying last year.
Yeah.
So start at the beginning of 2021 around maybe March.
Yep.
We were talking after we were still recovering from Trump. But I mean, I live in Canada and I was still like traumatized by the election.
Yes.
So we were talking about if not Trump, who else? Because people are saying, oh, Trump could pick Ron DeSantis instead of using Pence again, because at that time he was saying that Pence had betrayed him, multiple air quotes. But we were also thinking about we were having this discussion on another server, and we were also thinking about like maybe Nikki Haley. We were doing fantasy pairing, like Nikki Haley with Marjorie Taylor Greene or something like that.
Yeah.
If not Trump, who do you think?
Right now, based on the polling I've seen, the only person who has a real shot is Ron DeSantis at being the nominee. Now, we haven't even had the 2022 midterms yet. Anything could happen. Mm-hmm. Trump could be dead by then. Everything could completely mm-hmm. change. So I don't know. But in the polling I've seen right now, if Trump doesn't want it, and it seems Trump would win a primary, it would be DeSantis as the kind of second person, which I think is really scary, because DeSantis is as much Trump as Trump, but less incompetent. And I think that makes him more dangerous.
Thank you. But it would also be interesting to see if he ends up picking, if it is Trump, the front runner, if he ends up picking Ron DeSantis as his running mate, I think that would be interesting.
It would be fascinating. I don't think Trump will do it. And the reason why is over the last 6 to 9 months, as we've been covering, there seems to be increasing anger from Trump towards DeSantis, that DeSantis is mm-hmm. getting attention. So I actually think for ego reasons, Trump would not pick DeSantis.
Also, I have no idea how DeSantis got reelected. It was like less than a point.
Yeah.
That last gubernatorial election.
Well, he's up this year, I believe, right? So let's see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully. And people are calling me crazy, but I think Beto O'Rourke's got it. If the tide changes just a teeny little bit,
mm-hmm.
but people are saying that I'm going to take away your guns comment makes him unelectable. That's what people are saying.
I am concerned about that comment. I'm concerned about that comment.
Okay, well,
yeah.
Thank you so much. Hope you have a good year, David.
Thank you so much. Likewise, there is Jamie from Canada getting a bunch of important issues right on the table, and very, very quickly, I must say. Let's go next to Noble from Salt Lake City, Utah. Noble, you were on the air.
Hello, David.
Hello.
A longtime viewer.
Thank
you. How are you?
I'm doing well.
That's good. My question is more so, why aren't people on the left and the right doing overtures of olive branches and working more so towards economic and political change for the better than they are right now?
What's their incentive to do that?
Their incentive to do that against that right now is mostly culture war issues, but the incentive to do that right now is more or less like living standards being met, at least like healthcare or even cancellation of student debt, or hell, even holding some people who are in power for accountable for fraud or whatever not.
Okay, so here's the problem. You're thinking about this as if elected officials care primarily about.
I'm not asking people in Congress. No, I'm asking ordinary people.
Oh, tell me exactly what the vision is then. So, I mean, the issue. I think the problem is, Noble, that there's a whole bunch of people who don't agree about those issues. So, like, to get left and right working together on healthcare, you would have to get some of those people agreeing on what the solution is, and they mostly don't. To get left and right working on student loan forgiveness, you would have to get people on left and right in agreement on forgiving student loans. We just don't have that right now. There's actually, unfortunately, very little overlap on many of those issues.
There is one issue that I keep seeing overlap almost entirely between the left and the right, and that is corruption itself.
You know, you're not wrong, but the way in which they want to tackle... See, here's the problem on the corruption
issue.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Right now, the right has no interest in holding the Trump administration accountable for its rampant corruption. And there's really no way for the right to join the left against corruption right now without it going squarely against so many members of the Trump administration. That's a disincentive for the right to act on the corruption issue right now.
For now, yes. But for the rest of Congress, most of the right hates Congress.
Yes.
And the House and the Senate. And that's it, more so Democrats than Republicans, and admittedly, mostly Republicans who don't follow Trump.
Certainly. Certainly. Listen, I wish that what you're suggesting was more plausible. It feels implausible right now. I hope that changes.
Yeah. Now, here's my second question. I see a golden opportunity for people to run for Congress, because right now it doesn't take a lot of effort just to beat Republicans and Democrats. And if ordinary people were to run against these people, how well do you think ordinary people would do against incumbents like Blue Dog Republican Democrats and Republicans in Congress?
So I want to see it. I want to see it. I'm with you that I want to see it. Statistically, the candidate who raises more money wins, and it is tough for random everyday people to raise anywhere near the money that an incumbent would raise. But I do want to absolutely see more of it. Noble from Salt Lake City, thank you so much for the call. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more of your calls. So if you're standing by to talk to me, don't hang up. We'll be right back to it in a moment. Let's get back to Discord and hear from more of you for the first time in 2022. You can find the Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go next to Pablo from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Pablo, you're on the air.
Okay. I was calling in. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's on your mind today?
Sorry,
Pablo,
about that. I was calling because you know how it's fairly common now for Republicans to say that they're a little L libertarian, as a way of kind of distancing themselves from like a more, well, libertarians.
From the Libertarian Party, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that would be something that Democrats could do as a way of like sort of like, let's say, saying, oh, yeah, I'm a, you know, like I'm trying to figure out how exactly to phrase it. Like the Bull Moose Party was a fairly progressive party. So would there be a way that people could be like, oh yes, I'm a small D Democrat, as a way of kind of,
Yeah, I don't think so, because the difference is that when people talk about being Democrats, I know that there's this idea of just I'm for democracy, but that's, it doesn't have the same meaning. Like, for example, I, as a progressive, tend to be what you might call small L libertarian on a lot of different issues, in that my preference is if there's not a good reason for government to be involved, I don't need government involved. Mm-hmm. However, I draw that line very differently than right wing libertarians. OK, so there's some sort of coherence there. Small D Democrat doesn't really make sense because it's sort of a confusing term. I think that there's probably some other way to describe being. I mean, listen, when I say I am a libertarian leaning progressive, sometimes I even say I'm an anti-authoritarian progressive, because there are kind of revolutionary leftists that are much more authoritarian. I feel like I'm not using partisan terms to describe things. But I don't know. I don't know that small D Democrat really makes sense, to be totally frank with you.
No, I understand. I'm just, again, you know, just thinking about
you're thinking
things
out loud. I love it.
All right. I think that's it.
All right. Thanks so much, Pablo from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Great to hear from you. A lot of very good questions today. Let's see. Why don't we go next to there's just so many interesting people. Let's just try Tom from Green Bay once more. Tom, are you able to unmute yourself and chat now? Wow, that's really too bad. Really too bad. Let's try Oz from Kentucky. Oz from Kentucky, you're on the air. This isn't Dr. Oz, is it?
No. He's stealing my, he's robbing my name. How's it going, Dave? Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Oz.
Great. It's been so long since I got to talk to you. You know, it was pre-pandemic last time I spoke to you. So
is that true? It's been that long?
I'm a little nervous right now because I wasn't expecting to be on the air here.
You're doing great. What's on your mind, Oz?
Well, a lot of things. So since the last time I talked, you know, the pandemic and everything, it's horrible for everybody. And particularly it was hard for me. I lost my grandma.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She was a nursing home casualty here in Kentucky. Mm. And so it was a hard time, especially for people like me who are alcoholics. And yeah. I wasn't binged for quite a while, but I'm sober again.
That's fantastic. How long have you been sober?
It's been about a month and a half, which
that's great, Oz. I'm so glad to hear that.
Thank you. And yeah, I've got mental health treatment that I've needed too. That, you know, I was homeless for years.
Yeah.
And I used to live in California, and I moved back to Kentucky because I got tired of dealing with the wildfires there. Mm. I used to work on them as because I'm a I work in forestry. I'm a community organizer now, but
okay.
So much stuff, like, you know, I haven't talked to you, all the racial justice and police brutality protests. You know, I got shot during a protest in Cincinnati.
You were shot at, or you actually got shot?
I was shot with rubber bullets pretty much almost probably like 10 feet away on purpose. I had my hands up and they were trying to shoot me in the crotch. They shot me in the leg.
So a rubber bullet hit your leg. How injured were you?
I turned my thigh black and blue. I've got pictures of it, but
oh my god! Did you need? I mean, does that require treatment?
I didn't get any treatment for it. It healed.
Okay.
But
wow.
And pepper sprayed. I mean, pepper balled and stuff too. Got hit with those. But really, all of this stuff I haven't talked. I mean, the whole thing. As soon as Trump got elected, I knew I was mortified because I've lived around those people, you know, like skinheads and Nazis. I've been in prison before. I know how they think, unfortunately. Yeah. And when he was elected, I just saw, like, these people, these are neo-Confederates. They're Klan, they're Nazis, and they want to overthrow the government. They won a civil war. I knew it back then. So I was during his whole presidency, I was just in constant meltdown. And then when the January 6th happened, I was just, you know, I have PTSD and all kinds of stuff. So seeing that, you know, I was in the military too. I wasn't in combat, but I was in the Marines. And so just seeing all that stuff happen just was so traumatic.
Yeah.
Like it just made it so much harder to get sober. I finally did. And I lost, you know, a lot of family were lost to QAnon, like almost my entire family. Some of them have kind of come out of it, but like my dad, he's a truck driver, so he listens to like OAN all day in his truck.
Dear God. Well, listen, Oz, I can't tell you how glad I am to hear that you're 6 weeks sober. I'm glad that, you know, the rubber bullet, you seem to be doing all right. And I hope that, you know, we've got better times ahead. I'm going to let you go because we have so many people waiting to chime in. But it's great to hear from you, Oz. Let's go next to Eli from Texas. Eli, you're on the air.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering why we haven't seen any news on, like, immigration lately. Like, because I believe Biden administration just expanded Trump-era policies.
What Trump-era policies did Biden expand? I haven't heard that.
I forgot what it was. I think it was the stay at in Mexico policy, where it's like I think the immigrants seeking refuge or
That may be. Refugees? I mean, listen, I can't speak to that because I've just gotten back from a break and I just have not been following it recently. I think you're pointing to something really important. The reason we haven't heard much from Republicans about the disastrous job Joe Biden is doing on the border is because Republicans have been busy criticizing Joe Biden for other things, including the pandemic, vaccine mandates, cancel culture and the like. And as you and I probably would agree, Republicans started criticizing Joe Biden on the border immediately when he became president, even when he had not changed anything at that point relative to what Donald Trump was doing. And we knew all along that it was just a bad faith effort to hurt Joe Biden's approval rating, which it did. It worked. I mean, congratulations to them. It worked. But now they moved on to a different shiny object. And I do expect that if the pandemic abates, they're going to go right back to immigration.
Because, I mean, I don't feel like I don't have confidence in either party.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering, like, do you really think the Biden administration is just going to do anything about it?
I don't think the Biden administration is going to do anything dramatic on immigration. No. And so that's a reason to criticize them. But it's also a reason to understand that the right wing criticisms that say that he's going completely 180 degrees different than Trump are just lies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true.
All right, my friend, thank you so much for the call. Mm-hmm. Important. I mean, yeah, the Republicans got tired of immigration. They moved on to other things. And that's where we are. That's where we are right now. They may get back to it. You know, when there's an election coming up, Fox News stories about migrant caravans become very, very popular. We've seen that before. Let's go to Louis from New Brunswick. Which New Brunswick are you calling from, Louis?
Hi, David. This is New Brunswick, New Jersey, actually.
Love it. What's going on there?
All right. Well, I want to ask you a question. There's some diseases that affect certain people groups historically. So, for example, sickle cell might affect African Americans more.
Sure.
Tay-Sachs might affect. What would you say?
Jews.
Jewish people, I guess you could say, are people from Middle Eastern descent. Is that correct? Am I correct in saying that?
Tay-Sachs is absolutely one that is more prevalent in the Ashkenazi Jewish community. I don't know about Sephardic, but yes, point taken.
So what I want to say is that is Trumpism like a spiritual disease that affects white Americans more than others?
I don't think there's any genetic basis for it. I think it's a cultural basis. I love your framing of the question because we're thinking of Trumpism as a disease, and that's really interesting. But I think it's more of a cult-like cultural thing. And
a cultural disease.
It's a cultural disease, exactly right. So I think that it happens to afflict more white people for cultural reasons, not for genetic reasons.
Of course. I saw something really interesting. For Christmas break, I went down to the Maryland area and we went to a mall with the family and I noticed something really strange. People who were wearing masks in the mall, and there wasn't a mandate, I guess it was voluntary.
Okay.
But were almost entirely non-white. I'm talking about like African Americans, Latino Americans masking up, whereas the white Americans, like almost no mask. And my entire family noticed it. We're from New Jersey, as I mentioned before. And it was just really, really shocking. So
what did it mean? What did you take from it? What was your takeaway?
Well, you know, we had a lively discussion about what it all meant. And it really boiled down to what we thought was entitlement.
Mm.
Like we have the freedom not to wear a mask. You know, we didn't have any like discussions with anybody head on or anything. This is just, you know, speculation, but it was really prevalent. Like everyone noticed it from my family. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Louis, you raised some fascinating questions. I appreciate you calling in today.
All right. Take care.
All right. There's Louis from New Brunswick. Wow. That is quite a call. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for calls today. I'm so glad I got to speak to many of you. I know I didn't get to speak to everybody, but we will have another opportunity. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right, let's get into the first mailbag of 2022. We took a week off from the mailbag last year. Last week, the final week of 2021, we took the week off from the mailbag. Actually, we took a week off from the mailbag the previous week, too, because I was traveling. So we have the first mailbag of 2022. That's the point. You can email info@davidpakman.com. Don't abuse it. Probably close to 100 people now send emails so regularly that the emails are auto-filtered into a very specific folder kept only for law enforcement purposes, in case law enforcement comes to us and says, sir, have you ever heard from this person? And we say, yes, we have. Okay, let's get to a variety of different messages and emails that came in. First one is from someone who goes by the name Gypsy Soul, who says, who do you think you're? You're not a journalist, just a wannabe YouTube star. I never call myself a journalist. That's true. YouTube star is more subjective, but we're in the top half of 1% of YouTube. Make of that what you will. Not everyone refusing the vaccine is a Trump supporter, you uneducated clown. That's true. We never said that. We explained that Trump supporters are the most anti-vax group, but not every Trump supporter is anti-vax. So far, we agree. A lot of pejoratives, but we agree. You're spreading misinformation and conspiracies and lies. Well, that's, I reject that. That's a claim made without evidence. If you want to present some evidence, I will examine it. Take your vax and booster and shut your mouth. Well, no, I do a show where I comment. You don't have to listen. I'm allowed to speak. See, that's the thing about freedom of speech. You can't tell me to shut my mouth. You can tell me not to listen. You can tell me you're not going to listen, and that's fine. Mind your own business. Your discrimination and bullying and pushing and shaming unvaccinated people, and we are tired of it. All right, well, have a good time. I hope everything goes really, really well for you. And I'm finding myself without too much else to say to this individual. But that's daily. That's daily, guys. Dozens of messages like that. Here's a really weird one. I don't know if this is meant to be hate mail, if this is meant to be confusing or some kind of commentary. But Sean wrote to me and simply said, David, sir, Ivermectin. Have you vermectin? Vermectin. That's the way it's spelled. I don't know what the hell Sean is talking about, but this is a really strange job I have, where that's part of my job is interpreting messages like that and trying to figure out what does it mean. All right, now let's get on to more substantive stuff. Nigel wrote in and says, hey, David, new internal poll out from Georgia 14, Marjorie Taylor Greene's district, shows Marjorie with a strong lead in the Republican primary. This can't bode well for our country. Best regards, sir. Yeah, you know, we've been saying one of the big signals we're looking at in 2022, and this 2022 is about to start. We've got a few weeks before it starts. One of the signals we'll be looking at in terms of the country is, does Trumpism do well in November or does Trumpism fail in November? And we're not going to know the answer for some time. But one of the important things to remember is that a lot of these weaponized Trumpists, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert or Boebert, as Ro Khanna called her, Madison Cawthorn and others, they are in such heavy Republican districts and heavy Trump districts that their victories don't tell us that much. It's like they're obviously going to win if they run for re-election. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of those people. I expect her to win. And honestly, being banned from Twitter, being kicked off of her committee assignments, all of this sort of stuff, I don't think it hurts her at all with the people voting for her in her district. So, yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing really, really well. And I expect her to win. That's not what will tell us. Will Trumpism prevail long term in the United States? Next message is from Jade about California gas prices. Jade says, hi, David. I keep hearing you refuting Trump's claims that California gas prices have reached seven something. While presidents don't control gas prices and it's not widespread, there are, in fact, many gas stations along the California coast, specifically in the Big Sur area south of Monterey, that have gas prices in that range. The reason being, it's just so difficult to get gas to this area. Attached is a photo of a Valero and my wife and I stopped at that. My wife and I stopped at in September when we got married, showing gas between $6.59 and $7. Just wanted to clear it up. Big fan. Thank you for reading. Yeah. Remember, I never claimed when Trump would say the lie from Trump was not that one gas station might have had gas for $7.77. That was the highest number Trump picked, maybe $7.87, he even said. The deception was Trump was saying, when I left office, gas was $1.87. And now it's $7.77 in California. And there's like five lies in there. One, it wasn't $1.87 when he left. It was more like $2.20-something. Two, that's the national average gas price. And he's comparing it to the highest possible price that you that maybe exists somewhere in California for super premium. So you're not even comparing apples to apples. The apples to apples would be that when Trump said it was $7.77 in California, the national gas price was like $3-something. That's the deception. And I was just out in California. $6.59 is the most I saw. So it's not that these things can't exist anecdotally. It's that Trump's lying about the entire context and telling you, well, it used to be 187, now it's 777. It's like, it's not 777. That's not the average California price, and that's not the average national price, and it wasn't 187 when you left, and it had nothing to do with you. Okay, I think we get the point. Drew wrote in about testing problems, COVID testing problems, and says, hey, David, I like your assessment of the under-testing that will take place. But to add to the reason why testing numbers will be short, I live in Pittsburgh. Next PCR availability is 1/2/22. This is like a week old email. And there are not rapid tests. The testing infrastructure just isn't there right now. It's insane how bad the testing infrastructure is in the United States. We're 2 years in. Even blue states, I just saw friends in Boston with a picture where they're like a block and a half away from a streetlight. And they said, you have to get to that streetlight just to like check in and start the process to get a PCR test. It's hours. And then it can take 2 to 3 days to get your results. Should we be testing? Of course. If you're not super sick, should you go to the ER for a test? We're being told no, because then people are clogging up the ERs. So people go elsewhere. But the diagnostic value diminishes if you can't get the test for this long, if you're in lines potentially spreading it to other people in line. And at the end of the day, if you don't know sooner, you know, sure, everybody should isolate until their results. But it's just, this is not plausible if we are saying this is the way we're going to stop the spread. Testing that is this disastrous is just not going to stop the spread. It's unclear testing will stop the spread at all when many people have no symptoms and have no reason to go get tested. That's a different issue. But it is insane that 2 years in, we still don't have appropriate infrastructure in one of the richest countries in the world. Will wrote in and said, how are monoclonal antibodies more natural than vaccines? David, sir, have you noticed the glaring contradiction at the heart of the right's grift over monoclonal antibodies being a safer alternative to vaccine? They promote vaccine hesitancy on the grounds that they're risky, unnatural, and untested. But in what universe is a vaccine, which essentially trains your own immune system to fight off the virus on its own, less natural than having lab-produced synthetic antibodies injected into your bloodstream? Not to mention, we've been using vaccines a lot longer than we've been using monoclonal antibodies. So the idea that vaccines are somehow less tested doesn't make sense either. Yeah, guys, every talking point, last time I talked about this, people emailed saying, why are you against monoclonal antibodies? I'm not, but you take those when you're sick. I'd rather people not get sick in the first place. Or if they get sick, for it to be so mild, you wouldn't go and get monoclonal antibodies. They say, well, the vaccine's untested. And anyway, we have a treatment called monoclonal antibodies. Pfizer vaccine is fully approved, monoclonal only EUA. Well, the vaccine is big pharma. It's a cash cow for big pharma. A vaccine regimen is really, really cheap. Really cheap. There's a lot more money to be made on monoclonal antibodies. It's thousands of dollars per treatment. So the big pharma money grubbing thing out the window. Number three, side effects from the vaccine. Look at the side effects from the antibodies. Hundreds of millions of people have taken the vaccine, whereas a very, very small fraction of that have taken the antibodies. The side effects can be real, and it can also affect your immune system and its ability to fight COVID in the future. All of the natural, I'd rather have natural immunity so I'll get sick and then get monoclonal antibodies. There's nothing natural about monoclonal antibodies. Every argument is not a valid argument. Should we have both? Yes, but it's better for people not to get sick and not need monoclonal antibodies. It's such a simple idea. and yet we can't seem to get people to accept it. Benjamin wrote in and said, this is a beautiful Seinfeld quote, "It's not a lie if you believe it." Benjamin says, "Hello, David, sir. Hope you're able to recognize I go to UMass Amherst. I know you're an alum." Thought that was worth pointing out. Of course, go Minutemen. My question, plain and simple, can be summed up from the quote by George Costanza in Seinfeld. Remember, Jerry, it's not a lie if you believe it. I'm wondering, while we're able to truly tell Trump and the right's lies from the real truth, are they truly lying if they either A, get a piece of information that gives them the best info to prove their argument, or B, truly believe what they're saying is true? Is that lying or just being stupid? I hope the question is worded clearly enough. Go Minutemen, Ben. Yeah. There's no doubt that a ton of the people repeating COVID disinformation don't believe that they are lying. They believe that they're telling the truth. They're misinformed. They are, in many cases, incompetent. Many of them want to believe the things that they believe. So they're not also, you know, if I want to believe that the vaccine doesn't work and I find people telling me that who I believe are credible, I will accept it with less rigor and testing than I might if it's something I don't want to believe. So it can be a blend of the two. I'm going to accept and believe things that I already am predisposed to want to believe. That's certainly a part of it. But there is no question that many of the people falling for this stuff do believe it. They may not even know how to separate truth from fiction, right? They may not really understand what does it mean to research a topic, but they do believe it. And they're not just spreading disinformation on purpose. They're spreading disinformation, but they're spreading it because they believe it's true. Eden wrote in about 2024 and says, "Hey, David, longtime listener and member for a few years now, just interested to hear your opinion on a Warren Buttigieg ticket. Warren is progressive with a great track record. Buttigieg is much more corporate, but charismatic. Love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the great work." Warren Buttigieg is an interesting ticket because if you look at it piece by piece, is Elizabeth Warren the most progressive? No. But is she one of the most progressive Democrats in the Senate? Yes. Wealth tax. Wealth tax is something, it's quite aggressive. And there's a lot of progressives who love it. She's one of the few people who likes the wealth tax. Is she the most progressive on every issue? No, but she has some an economic ideas. Many of her ideas are quite progressive in the Senate. Pete Buttigieg, is he the most progressive? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But is he at least theoretically the type of charismatic figure? He goes on Fox News and just crushes them, absolutely crushes them. Energy and youth, which is lacking in much of the Democratic Party. Yet he fits that bill as well. And yet, with a lot of so-called progressives, if you said, what about Warren Buttigieg? They would say, oh, that is a toxic corporate pro-business. That's horrible, horrible, horrible. Do I think it's a dream ticket? No. Do I think that it actually, when you take emotion out of it and you say, what have we had? What were Hillary's views? What are Trump's views? What are the mainline Republican views? What are the mainline Democratic views? And you say, here's Warren's perspective and Buttigieg, and here's the kind of intangibles. She's not very charismatic at all. Buttigieg very much so. It's an interesting ticket. It is not a dream ticket. It is not the uber progressive ticket, but it is an interesting ticket. And what sort of pains me a little bit is that a huge part of the left would reflexively say absolutely not, because they hate both of those folks as individuals. And that saddens me. I'm not calling for Warren Buttigieg. It's not super exciting to me, but I do think that when we look at these, we really have to take a step back, take emotion out of it and say, let's look at policy. Let's put it on paper and see exactly where these people would fall. I think it's an interesting idea. By the way, I have no idea what the best Democratic ticket would be in 2024. Not even thinking about that yet. Not even thinking about that yet. The first question is Joe Biden running for re-election? Because if he is, nobody's going to challenge him. And that's for better or worse. I've said I don't love Biden's chances in 2024 against Trump. I don't love Biden's chances in 2024 against someone like Ron DeSantis. But if Biden runs for re-election, I don't believe anyone's seriously going to try to take it away from him. Let me know your thoughts. We have a great bonus show for you today. It's actually me on today's Friday bonus show. Pat is out this week. He'll be back next week. We will see you on the bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com and get yourself instant access.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I have negotiated with Russia before as a Norwegian prime minister, and I know it's possible to make deals with Russia.
The U.S. and Russia begin talks in Geneva as NATO calls on Russia to remove its forces from Ukraine and Russian troops help suppress deadly protests in Kazakhstan. We'll go to Moscow for an update. Then to Australia, where a judge has allowed unvaccinated tennis star Novak Djokovic to be released from immigration detention amidst controversy over the vaccine exemption. We'll look at how his case has intensified international scrutiny over Australia's treatment of refugees jailed in the same rundown hotel he was.
We ask you, why does he take in prisons of the celebrity to bring attention to our polite?
Then nearly a quarter of U.S. hospitals are reporting critical staff shortages as the Omicron coronavirus variant drives an unprecedented surge in cases.
Some healthcare systems are going to collapse, and those death rates that you have seen are going to get even higher when that happens, when doctors and nurses simply cannot any longer take care of every patient.
We'll speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Ed Yong, science writer at The Atlantic, about how hospitals are in serious trouble. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 19 people, 9 of them children, were killed and dozens injured on Sunday when a fire spread thick smoke through a high-rise apartment building in the Bronx. New York's fire commissioner said victims suffered from severe smoke inhalation and the fire was triggered from a malfunctioning electric space heater. Many of the building's residents are African immigrants. New York City Mayor Eric Adams urged victims to come forward regardless of their immigration status.
If you need assistance, your names would not be turned over to ICE or any other institution. We want people to be comfortable in coming forward.
The building where Sunday's fire took place is owned by an investment group whose co-founder, Rick Gropper, served on Eric Adams' transition team as an advisor on housing issues. It was New York City's deadliest residential fire in decades and came just days after a blaze at a public housing property in Philadelphia killed 12 people, including 8 children. Democratic Congressmember Richie Torres, whose district includes the Bronx building that burned Sunday, blamed decades of disinvestment in affordable housing that he said leaves buildings, quote, wide open to catastrophic fires that can cost people their lives, unquote. In Georgia, the 3 men who chased down and murdered Ahmaud Arbery were sentenced to life in prison Friday. Travis McMichael, who shot Arbery 3 times, and his father, Gregory McMichael, a former police officer, will not be eligible for parole. Their neighbor, William Bryan, will become eligible for parole after 30 years. Before announcing the sentences, Judge Timothy Walmsley held a minute of silence representing just a fraction of the time 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery ran from the 3 killers. Outside the courtroom, Arbery's family and their supporters celebrated the sentences. This is his father, Marcus Arbery.
He's a kid of love.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he brought people together.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm telling you, he was the younger, but he thought he was the oldest.
Yeah,
so, hey, Ahmaud, rest in peace.
Yeah,
because mom and daddy got